Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
If you get to be 65 or 70 and later, and the people that you want to have love you actually do love you, you're a success. I've never seen anybody that reaches that age. I mean, I'm not talking about somebody that's extreme poverty or pain or something, but I've never seen anybody that, if they have a lot of people that love them, that is other than happy. And I've seen some very, very wealthy people that I give testimony to leaders doing things, schools after and everything. Nobody loves them.
It's December already, guys. Christmas just around the corner. Can you actually feel that festive season, even though 2020 year is like, I don't know, where did it go?
House of Cards.
House of Cards. I saw a picture the other day, by the way, to say, you know, like the 2020 calendar with January and February on top and then everything jumbled up in the middle and then you've got December. That's actually the feel. That's actually how I feel in terms of how 2020 has been. John, what do you reckon? How's the year been for you?
Yeah, look, we've survived. I mean, I get, you know, we're still standing, to quote Rocky.
And smiling. And smiling.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating year. Like, weirdest I've ever seen myself, although I'm not that old. And lots of lessons for 2020.
That's good. And Jazz, how are you doing, mate?
Well, yeah, really good, mate. But put it this way, we made some predictions. They worked out well. So for us, it's been all right. Life is tough otherwise, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we can control. There's a lot of things we can't control, right? But I think, you know, you talked about predictions. That's good. We probably cover predictions towards our last episode of the year, which is going to be our next week. So get to be released next week. So I guess for our listeners, you know, we'll be covering a bit of what we learned out of 2020 and also a bit of forward looking in terms of what we think is going to happen in 2021. So stay tuned for our last episode next week. But yeah, in terms of second last episode this week, we do have, again, we've got a few news topics to cover today. And I reckon we'll start off with, I mean, it's positive news this week, which is good. That's what we want. And I reckon we'll start off with one of the biggest topics, I reckon, that's being around the headlines. Australia's out of recession with the latest GDP data. Mm-hmm. Figure here. What is it? What's
that's
the latest?
That's right. The data came out for the September quarter and we grew by 3.3% annualized. Ooh. Which is good. So they say, you know, so I'll sort of go through a little bit of the data. It said Australia's economy is officially on the road to recovery with GDP increasing by 3.3% in the September quarter. And that's an annualized figure. It marks an end to 6 months of economic contraction. So that's two quarters of economic contraction. Excellent. And it comes after a record 7% fall in the June quarter. Now, within the data, it says consumers led the way with the national household consumption increasing by a record of 7.9% due to increases on spending on goods and services. And spending was up everywhere except Victoria. The only other really interesting thing for me was that they were sort of saying household savings ratios are still extremely high at 19%, and it indicates that households remain cautious. So high savings rates, economic bounce back, lots of consumer spending, but probably making up for the consumer spending that we missed, and Victoria hasn't. Victoria was the only state that didn't see that increase in consumer spending. Jazz, as our token Victorian, what do you make of the numbers?
It's funny. I was just looking at the charts as well, John. The savings rate, it's right in front of me, and the savings rates definitely have gone up for this year, even compared to last year. They were up last year, but this year they're definitely higher. GDP growth obviously is good. Victoria, I think, will catch up pretty well now that it's fully open and businesses are back on their feet for the Christmas period and all. What I was, as you were mentioning it, I was more thinking we are more heading into the Christmas period. Well, we are in the Christmas period now, but it will be interesting to watch this set of data for the next quarter, see what comes out of it once this festival season is over, because this will drive up GDP a bit higher, I think, compared to obviously normal. There's no doubt about it. So it will be interesting to watch what the GDP numbers look like. But the news overall has been very, very positive. And as long as we don't see some other wave coming from somewhere or some other curveball being thrown in 2021, with the things like what China is doing, I think the news out this week was 200% wine tax that China recently posted, those kind of news. If they start to come out more and more, then maybe it's some other impact. But I think that's just that kind of a war going on, words war going on between the countries. That's all.
That's a good point about that. There's a bit of a trade war going on with China. I mean, there's a bit of an embargo on Australian wines, I think, and they previously mentioned that they would be phasing out Australian coal imports.
Yeah.
It's all ahead of us, isn't it? I mean,
so
and this just looks like a bounce.
Exactly. So it's just something to be watched. And this is festive season. The numbers are going to be good, and especially when the people have been in the lockdown, haven't done much over the last couple of months. Obviously, they are excited to be back in the retail, have some retail therapy, and hopefully they'll enjoy, families will enjoy the Christmas season. But the numbers to be watched will be next year, start of 2021, first quarter. Let's see what the innings look like and if we're going to hit on the bat or not.
Would the Christmas be the same this year, though? I mean, with all the social distancing that's still in place, you know, I know New South Wales, we've already even lifted up even higher now, so that, you know, more people can be outdoors and more families can be reunited. But I gotta have to question whether the you know, if you compare year on year, let's say for example last year to this year after the Christmas data's been in out, whether 2020 is going to have a normal, inverted comma, I use it loosely, normal Christmas, just like what we had before, or people are still going to be spending like they used to. So I don't have a perspective on that. What do you guys think?
That goes back to the saving rates partly that John was mentioning. Mm. Saving rates are shooting up, and it's clearly showing on the charts as well. Then that tells us that they're spending, but they're still being very cautious on how much citizens spend, basically. And that obviously will drive a little less velocity of money in the economy. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was actually going to come back to the saving rates as well. I think that's really telling because normal savings rates in the US, Australia, Europe, they're around 3%. They're very, very low. We're sort of an economy of consumers, and to see savings rates at 19% is not what you... It's actually a good thing because it leads to capital formation, but it's not what you expect to see, particularly when all the policy settings are geared towards not savings. You know, like interest rates are at zero. They don't want us saving. They want us spending. And we're saving despite the policy environment, which means there's a lot of fear out there. There's still a lot of fear. Another thing, and this is to your point, Jazz, about let's kind of look more to Q1 next year to see what those GDP numbers are, because if you have, like, they use an example of the airlines, where the airlines declined by 95%. And then in one quarter, and then they doubled in the next quarter. Well, that still means you're not 90% down from the peak, even if you doubled in the quarter after. So it's sort of once your economy declines that much, any growth off that low base is going to look good. Yeah. But you've kind of got to measure the growth once it normalizes again, and not off the trough. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm happy to be patient and just wait to see what the numbers look like, because I think the economy is still quite bad.
Mm-hmm. And one more thing to say...
Take a while to recover.
Mm-hmm. And one more thing to say is that there has been...
Go ahead.
Last few weeks, there has been a bit of news around the vaccine as well, whether it's the Pfizer vaccine or the biotech. And they're all talks at the moment. I know UK is trialing it next week, I think, or in the next couple of days, basically. So it'll be interesting to watch. Yep. But if you just think... If we forget everything, if we don't look at the numbers and just think logically for a second on what John said, the international arrivals are still near zero. Tourism, yes, is boosting internally. Commercial is still impacted. So it will be. It's good that the positive set of data is coming out, but Q1 will be the one to watch.
Boris Johnson is obviously very ambitious in terms of trying to make sure the UK side of things is under control as soon as they can. But I think it is generally positive news, right? They're saying 95% cure rate in that sense. So it'll be interesting to see how that impacts, I guess, the global economy and the asset prices next year for 2021. John, what do you think? How's that going to impact that?
Yeah, look, the world is waiting for a vaccine that can be mass produced. Now, interestingly, so we're recording this on a Friday morning. In the close of the US session, the US trading session, about an hour before it closed, Pfizer came out with an announcement to say something along the lines of that they couldn't guarantee early mass production, that they weren't going to be able to get it to everyone. Oh. Okay. And the stock market dropped off a lot. It dropped about 200 points in the last 30 minutes to an hour.
Just based on that news, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it's interesting that a lot of the economic confidence is based on, you know, linked to the vaccine.
Mm.
We'll get a vaccine either way. We'll probably get it by April. And then the question will be, well, how quickly can we roll it out?
Yeah.
Who gets it first? Which citizens get it first? And so on. But there'll be a choice of vaccines, I'd expect.
Yeah, just a matter of time, right? So, yeah, and in terms of when Australia is going to get it. But I think overall, you know, the worst is kind of behind us. We still need to see and review how valid these vaccines are once they're rolled out. But, yeah, I think 2021 would definitely be a lot brighter in that perspective. Mm. At least overseas travel, international travel, should hopefully be back on board, which is a lot of people are waiting on right now. Sure, yeah. We all are.
I think a lot of the debate next year will be, okay, now we have a vaccine, how do we normalize our lives? So can we jump on a plane without a vaccine? And if not, whose decision is that? And all those sorts of interesting things. So
yeah.
I think that's what we have to look forward to next year.
Very true. Very true. Okay. Cool. All right. That's good. Moving on. So I actually have an update on the home builder side of things. I think a lot of people aware of that home builder was initially announced earlier this year to have $25,000 for those people who are building a brand new home or basically doing major renovations to their own property. There's a lot of conditions behind it. So, you know, you guys can obviously jump on the home builder site to actually find out all the nitty gritty details on the current condition. But the good news was that Treasury has came out and made the announcement that the new home builder or the extension of the home builder will be in place. So the new criteria is that the extension will be extended for all new build contracts signed between 1 January 2021 and 31st of March 2021. Okay, so right now, I think the contracts need to be signed before 31st December 2020. So people thought that by the end of 2020, no one can actually get it anymore. So they've extended that to say, if you are signing a brand new contract between 1st of January 2021 to 31st of March, then if it's for owner-occupier purchases, you will actually get $15,000 home builder grant. So in other words, they are subsidizing you $15,000 instead of $25,000. So right now, it's $25,000. But it's taking a bit of drop, okay? So 15,000 from 1st of January to 31st, and the property price caps for new builds in New South Wales and Victoria has now been increased to $950,000 for New South Wales and $850,000 for Victoria, okay? So, and in addition, the construction commencement deadline will be extended from 3 months to 6 months for all eligible contracts signed or after 4th of June 2020. So right now, I think there's, you know, all the tradies are saying, oh, we can't keep up with the workload just because, you know, everyone needs the contract signed today. Everyone needs the work to start within the next 3 months. There's only so many tradies that's available to be able to do the work all of a sudden, right? So everyone's kind of like, okay, well, I want to make sure that I can qualify for this. So now they've relaxed that rule a little. They say the construction commencement deadline can be extended from 3 months to 6 months. So it's giving a bit more leeway for the tradies so that they don't have to work. They don't have to work so hard, Aussies, at the end of the day. But I think, John, what do you reckon? This is definitely going to stimulate the brand new housing construction activity for the first quarter at least next year, right? So,
yeah. I don't like this sort of thing. So let me start by saying that I don't know that $25,000 kicker will really make that much of a difference to someone who's building a new home. Let's say you're spending $800,000 building, or if you're spending maybe half that on a major renovation.
Mm.
I'm not sure that $25,000 or $15,000 is really going to make that much of a difference. I think that if you could afford $800,000, you were probably okay anyway. That's
my top, first basically.
Point. I don't think it really is going to change anyone's economic decision whether they could, we can get the new house now, honey. That's point number one. Point number two is kind of your point about, like, you know, where do all these, like, from an economic perspective, where do all the tradies come from? So printing money, and that's essentially what this is, right? Governments do it too, is a very fascinating thing, right? So all the wealth in our society is the goods and the services. It's the tradies, it's the bricks, it's the houses, it's the fruit. That's the wealth. Now, the money, the currency, is the way to measure the wealth. It's not the wealth itself. It's like going to a dry cleaner and then printing all these receipts and thinking that they're just printing shirts or printing suits. They're not. It's there's only a fixed number of shirts,
yes.
And by issuing receipts, you're not getting any more shirts. So it feels like that to me. Like, if we're just issuing money and just expecting kind of tradies to emerge somehow, which is strange. So I don't like it. I don't think it makes a big difference because I don't think it's going to change anyone's decision. I think it's kind of just a subsidy. It reminds me of what Ronald Reagan said. He said something like, "If it moves, tax it. If it doesn't, if it stops moving, subsidize it." I'm being sarcastic. Yes. I kind of feel like this is not a program that we need. But yeah, what do you reckon?
Obviously, Treasury holds a very different view to that extent, yeah. Right? They do want people to build, and I think their main concern earlier this year, obviously before Home Builder was announced, was that the property is going to crash, the property price is going to crash as such. So they need a building, and they need to stimulate the work for tradies at that point in time, given there was literally no, I think the new building activity was like the lowest since, I don't know, the 90s or something, right? So I think that's primarily the main reason, but I do, I mean, like you, I find it interesting. Number one, they've dropped it from 25K to 15K. Now, yes, you know, if someone can afford to build like a, you know, like an 800 to 900, right? But if you think about it, like, there's a lot of people who's building in Queensland, maybe only 500 or, you know, 400 to 500, that kind of price range. Then 15 or 25K is going to be quite a bit of significant in that extent. And I think what this is going to do is they're actually going to push those tradies even harder to try to get things signed before 31st December, because people, no one will want to miss out the 10K. Let's put it that way, right? Like, hey, just because there's a date difference, I'm going to lose our 10K. There's no freaking chance I'm going to do that. I want to be able to get that extra 10K in my pocket. So imagine, I can imagine from now till the lead up of the Christmas, either these builders or, you know, there's tradies is going to get a lot of pressure in terms of getting things locked in, getting work done as soon as they can. Some may even have to work throughout Christmas. Who knows? So it may actually, if they kept it at 25K, then I think fair enough. You know, that's going to spread the workload out. But I think right now they're actually compressing the work during this month to try to get things so that a lot of people can try to get that 25K. But yeah, as you mentioned, you know, like, I think they lifted the price cap for New South Wales and Victoria because obviously the price has been soaring quite high. So they still want people to be able to be eligible for these home builder, therefore incentivizing them to build more in the upcoming quarter, I should say. So, but all in all, yeah, I don't think it's going to have a massive difference in terms of the decision, the economic decision that people make. So that side of things, yeah, totally agree with you. But I think at least it's given more opportunities for those first home buyers to be able to own their dream home and still get a bit more subsidy that helps them to kickstart. Whether that's going to be their, you know, because they're short of deposit or after the house is completed, a bit of saving buffer just in case something does go wrong, it will help. So I thought that was interesting, but I kind of thought about it the other day. I don't think it came in as a surprise as well, because, you know, given the fact that it was only 6 months, the criteria were very stringent. You know, from one, I can remember it was only eligible for Australian citizens, not even PRs can be eligible for it. So, so it was the criteria is quite stringent, which means a lot of people would have trouble getting it. in that instance. So they, you know, that's why I foresee, yes, they will have to extend it, but in what form? I don't know. And now and then this news rolls out.
Yeah, these programs have a way of becoming permanent too. I think, not to quote Ronald Reagan twice in one one session, but he said something like, you know, there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. And what happens is that let's say you throw $50,000 at construction, the price of construction goes up by $50,000. So then you need to keep the subsidy because now it's become $50,000 more expensive. Unaffordable.
Yes.
And so they have a way of becoming permanent. you know, we'll see. Not a subsidy I think we need, but I think it'll probably be around for a while.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's see what happens during next March when I think 31st of March is also when the current JobKeeper 2.0 finishes. So, you know, again, whether they're going to extend that is going to be interesting again. So, you know, that's something to watch. All right, moving on. So I think we have an interesting graph here about Australian house lending that was posted earlier. So we've got the first home buyers, investors and owner occupiers, excluding first home buyers, household lending all shooting up in a very sharp manner in towards the end of 2020. So, you know, I think the positive thing here is that the investors are starting to come back in the market as well. I think that's the way that I read it. The velocity is obviously not as sharp as first home buyers or owner occupiers, but it's good that they are coming back into the market. So, you know, it's like everyone's going frenzy with property right now. And the house lending is basically reflecting that. John, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, so there are three lines. One's owner-occupiers, one's investors, and one's first home buyers. And yep. You're right, like they're all going up at the moment. But what we can see is the owner-occupier ex-finance, so owner-occupiers, I think it's at a record. It's at about $12 billion.
Yeah.
It's never been this high.
$12 billion. Mm.
And that eclipsed the previous high, which was in about 2016-17. It kind of confirms what we see, right? People, the investors aren't in the market. First home buyers are buying houses and the finance figures show that. Investor finance has collapsed, except there's a tiny, tiny little V which right at the end, which suggests that it's now turning around.
Yep.
So investors might be coming back. And the first home buyers who kind of bump along the bottom. So it's kind of the least or the lowest amount of finance out there have overtaken investors.
Mm.
That's interesting. There's been a bit of switch between first home buyers and investors.
Given the amount of incentive that's throwing out first home buyers, I'm probably not surprised about that too, isn't it?
And, you know, it kind of ties into what we're seeing on the ground, which is that rents are collapsing as far as what I can see with my own eyes. The data says rents are in Sydney are down about 10%, but from what I can see, it's a lot sharper than that. And what I think is happening is there are a lot of economic incentives to be a buyer and not be a renter. So all these people are moving out of the rental market and into the
buying market.
And they're either a first home buyer or an owner occupier, but they're not investors because that seems to not make sense because rents are so low. So that's interesting as well. And what happens is like the market's a weighing machine. Eventually prices will go so high that it suddenly becomes more compelling to rent again. And I think the
cycle then continues. High,
and the cycle continues.
Isn't it? So it's like a natural cycle, basically, right? When the prices and rental income comes to an equilibrium, that's when investors started to come back in. But when the prices shoot up too much and the rent hasn't increased as much or, in fact, decreased, like in Sydney and Melbourne at the moment, then obviously no investors will be wanting to get into the market as such. So, it is an interesting cycle that we're seeing. But, I think it's pretty positive in terms of looking at these data figures. But I also want to, it's a good segue to talk about actually our RBA governor, Phil Lowe, is actually Dr. Lowe came out and made a few statements and conversations this week. By the way, December cash rate remained the same. I think nobody reported that. That was interesting, and I think that was as expected. So I don't think I even got a notification whatsoever just because it was too boring. But yeah. But yeah, December cash rate has remained the same. Historical low still at 0.10, so no change there. But what I wanted to highlight there was the RBA governor has actually, because a lot of people right now are thinking that there's a fear of missing out factor, the FOMO in the market, especially sitting in Melbourne. I think, John, you would be able to attest to that, that's for sure, right? You're on the ground all the time. So a lot of people are like, oh, if I don't buy, then next year it's going to shoot up like crazy, 20%, 30% even, you know, I don't know. But Dr. Low is actually holding a different perspective here. He actually thinks that the low population growth is going to curb the house price rise next year. Okay, so I'll read out a few of his statements in terms of what he said. Okay, so he's saying the slower population growth is going to have a first order effect on house prices. And you're seeing this clearly in Sydney and Melbourne in the apartment markets, where the vacancy rates are at the highest in more than a decade. And rents are falling at a rate that we haven't seen before. Now, whether that remains the case, it's hard to see generalized widespread increase in house prices. There's going to be shifts in relative prices between houses and apartments between various cities and regions. But I'm not expecting to see a rapid generalized increase in house prices because of population dynamics. Now, that's so basically saying because he held concerns early in 2020 that prospective unemployment rate of over 10%, along with a 10% fall in output and no population growth, would result in large declines in property prices, which would have undermined community confidence and created issues for the banking system. Okay, so that's obviously no longer the case at the moment. But having said that, you know, population forms the fundamentals of property prices to that extent. So he's not expecting that it's going to be a, you know, a crazy ride in the next few years or next year at least. But in essence, he's not expecting a boom, okay? But it'll probably be more of a moderate growth in a sense. So, John, what do you reckon? Do you agree with him on that population sets the fundamentals of the property prices?
Partially. I mean, I think what he said is reasonably uncontroversial, that without any population growth, property prices will go up less than they would have if there was population growth.
Yes.
That's pretty uncontroversial. I mean, when we step back, we say, you know, what drives real estate? It's the supply and the demand of housing, i.e.
Correct.
People.
Yep.
And the supply and the demand of credit, i.e. interest rates and so on. So we have, in a sense, compensated for the lack of population growth with an increase in the amount of credit, which will also drive demand. So I think that he's right that it'll be lower than it would have been if people were flooding into the country, but I still think that it still will be maybe higher than people think will happen.
Okay.
But I think it will come out of renters. You know, if we think about, you know, we talked about this kind of idea of renters and buyers being like a seesaw, and you've got people moving over on one side of the seesaw and tilting the scales a little bit. That's happening in a very pronounced way at the moment. And the reason it's more pronounced than usual is you've got population, which is steady, which is not what we're used to in Australia. We're normally used to it going up about 3%.
Correct, yes.
1.5%. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing a very pronounced tipping of the seesaw. If you introduce population growth into our property markets, it will boom. And that's a capital I for if the borders open and they don't move interest rates back up, we'll have a boom in real estate.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good point, I think. And so all dependent on the borders at this point in time, when they're gonna open up, when they're gonna allow the students to come back, which will then, you know, increase the rental demand. All the landlords are suffering right now. So they're all taking a hit. But I think fundamentally, as you pointed out, it's because of the population growth previously in the last few years that's driven this country to this record kind of house prices. And yes, it's a reasonable assumption at the moment that because of the population growth is what, only about 0.2% expected next year, if without opening the borders, then there probably won't be as much demand as such, and that will have an impact on the on how much the house prices can grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
And he also actually, and he also mentioned something about if, you know, if the property prices does get slightly out of control, and he was asked by this, so a question to say, if it does get out of control, then would there be additional prudential limits proposed by APRA to limit the property prices, which I thought is also interesting to share what his response is. So he responded that it's not a remit of APRA or RBA to target a specific level of house prices, and added that it would be a mistake to set this as an objective. Instead, property prices will be determined by population growth, supply and demand, and the appetite for consumer to borrow, as according to Dr. Lowe. Exactly what you said there, John. So supply and demand. So he also mentioned there are a lot of things that influence house prices, and it's not right for us to target a specific level. What we've got to do is make sure that when people are borrowing against housing, they don't borrow too much, and lending standards are appropriate. So I think that was a very, very important message to get across to everyone who's looking at buying properties in the current market. You know, couple things there. So as you mentioned, the property prices are being controlled by basically population growth, supply and demand, and the appetite for consumers to borrow, like, you know, John, you mentioned there. So definitely an agreement there. And you know, the RBA and APRA has no specific target to control how it's gonna basically, you know, they're not gonna intervene to a degree, of course. But in the current environment, they also want to make sure that people are being optimistically cautious in terms of their borrowing, I would say. Just because the interest rate is at a record low. And I know Jazz has been harping on this for a few times, especially first home buyers, you know, looking at what 95%, some even goes up to 98% LVR lending in the current environment. Just because you can doesn't mean that you should, you know, especially when, you know, yes, the music is still singing at the moment with the low rates, but what happens if the rates does go up in 3 or 4, even 5? And it's a matter of when. It's just a matter of when, basically. So, but yeah, that was some interesting statements from Dr. Lowe, which I thought I'll share. John, have you got any thoughts around that?
Yeah, two very quick thoughts. One is, I think it depends. The RBA hasn't come out like the Fed and the ECB to tell us what their inflation targets are going to be. So the Fed came out a couple of months ago and said, we're not targeting 2% anymore. Oh. We're targeting 2% as an average. So that means they want and will let inflation run above 2% for a period of time. Now, we don't know where the RBA stands on that. So the reason that's important is, if they want an average of 2% inflation, they will let inflation run hot for a bit longer. But we're not. I kind of feel like the RBA might be a little bit more responsible. Actually, I don't think that they will let that happen. But if they decide to follow the Fed's example, then they will leave rates lower for longer, and inflation will go above 2% for a bit longer, and that will influence it. The second thing I wanted to say is that they're being a little bit disingenuous about whether or not they care whether a specific asset goes up or down. We know that APRA's come in, and we know that the RBA talks about house prices all the time. APRA in 2016 tried deliberately to slow property price growth down. So to say that they don't look at that stuff, I don't think is entirely accurate. The reason they have lending provisions out there is because we have like a four pillar policy, and they know that the RBA has the back of the big four, and if they get involved in reckless lending, the RBA and the taxpayers would come in to bail one of the big four out. And if there was more of a free market in banking, then they would just let them fail. But because we don't have that, they will regulate how they lend, and they will bail them out if they fail. So they will maintain cautious lending standards, because no one wants to bail out the CBA, for example. That would be a huge event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't read out the whole article there, but they did talk about beforehand, you know, that say, for example, there were at one point in time, there were almost 40% of the loans that was made interest only. didn't require $1 of principal being repaid. And that, from Prudential perspective, is unsound. So, you know, I think I probably haven't painted the whole picture in the sense that he said, yes, we are not going to intervene directly, but, you know, the but I probably haven't actually, because I don't want to read out the whole equation. But yeah, look, they are saying they're obviously making sure that responsible to it still to a degree, despite the fact in March, I think responsible lending is going to go. I think they're going to tweak it a different way to say, to make sure that the consumers are still being protected. And there's various ways to do that without impacting the flow of the credit, which is primarily the goal here.
Yeah, I think real estate's got a way to run. I think people are aware that there's no population growth at the moment.
Mm.
Interest rates are going to stay low to compensate for that. So,
yep.
Yeah, we'll see.
Should be good. Okay, John, have you got any auction clearance rates that you'd like to run through with us?
I do. Look, all of the November data came out during the week. So yep. We've got, the first week of the month always presents us with a plethora of very interesting real estate data. If we start with the clearance rates for last weekend, interestingly, the Sydney clearance rate went above 80% for the first time since COVID. So There was a Sydney's clearance rate at very high listings as well. And the clearance rate was 80.1%. Oh, sorry, 81%. 81%. Wow. Yeah. Yep.
When was the last time you saw an 81 in Sydney?
I don't know, but it would have been easily this time last year, and probably yep. I mean probably February or January.
Yeah,
I mean,
fair enough.
It was hot in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Melbourne, I mean Melbourne, the home of the auction. Their listings are increasing significantly every week, and their clearance rate was 75.6%.
Good.
Brisbane, Adelaide and Canberra bounce around, but Brisbane was 67%, Adelaide was 81%, and Canberra was 72%. So, Dr. Andrew Wilson, who's a property economist, he used the B word. He was saying, this is a boom type environment. If we look at some of the house price data from November, so if we look at the month, every single market was up. But Dave, should we make it interesting? Do you want to guess which was the best performing capital city and which was the worst performing capital city?
Best performing for the month would it be so this is just capital city, is it?
Just capital city.
Okay.
Not including Darwin.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me make a wild guess then. Sydney is the best performing?
Sydney's not, but it did grow.
Okay.
One more guess for best.
One more guess. Canberra.
No.
Okay. What was it?
The best performer was Adelaide.
Adelaide. Wow. Okay.
Followed by Perth.
I was going to be my next one.
Adelaide grew at 1.3% and Perth grew at 1.1%.
Wow.
So out of the big, do you want to hazard a guess which was the worst performer? It still grew, but the worst performer?
Melbourne.
I would have said the same thing, but it was Sydney.
Okay.
Sydney grew at 0.4% and Melbourne grew at 0.7%.
So Melbourne's exceeded Sydney growth at the moment. Wow. Okay.
I mean, so Melbourne's been the worst performer for the year, but in that particular month, it's bouncing back. So very interesting. So we've got Adelaide and Perth are the top performers. If I look at the number of listings, the number of listings in those two hot markets, Adelaide and Perth, are the markets that have declined the most. So the number of listings in Brisbane as well have really declined the most. So it's really inverse correlation. If listings go down, prices go up and so on. But all the markets are up, very positive. The clearance rates are very high. Unless there's an intervention either in lending standards or interest rates, I can't see this necessarily slowing down. I mean, it won't be a straight line, but real estate's going to...
Yeah.
Turn out some gains every month for the next little while.
Good for asset holders again, who's got properties about, isn't it? So
interesting. One more thing.
Yes, go for it.
Best performing. I've got all this data in front of me, so I'm totally cheating here. But what's the what's the best performing capital city since COVID, and what's the worst
since COVID? best performing. Either Perth or Adelaide?
Yep. Adelaide.
Adelaide. Mm. Adelaide. That's what I thought.
And what's the worst? The worst is a bit easier.
Can I? Is Darwin included?
No.
The worst is Melbourne.
Yeah. Melbourne dropped 5.1%.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's just based on the current timeline, right? If you give it another few months, I reckon that might change over time. Yeah, but at the moment, I think it's logical to assume that way.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. Look, Australia combined capitals since COVID lockdown, it's down 1.9%. Can you imagine just 1.9%?
I know, shortest recession ever to that degree, right? Like, yeah, who would have been able to imagine that how quickly we're able to bounce back? And how solid and how robust our property market prices have been keeping up.
100%. I think it's a topic for next week, but the question for me was COVID-19 shut down the earthquake and we haven't had the tsunami yet?
Mm-hmm.
Or have we had it? Is this it? Is it, you know?
That'd be a good topic for our discussion next week, that's for sure. John, make sure you put it in the agenda. Get brought up. Cool. Anything else, John?
No, that's heaps on property. It's good, or for all our real estate owners out there, it was a good month for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Awesome. Well, that's about it for this week. Our second last episode for 2020. But next week we've got our final Grand Slam coming up. do a bit of review about what did we learn out of 2020 and some forward looking perspectives on what's going to happen with property in 2021 and general, maybe it's a bit of general economics as well. So it'll be an interesting discussion. That's for sure. I'm already looking forward to it. So it'll be good. All right. To our listeners, thank you again for joining us. We really appreciate your time. Hope you find some value out of our conversations and discussions and hope you be able to make a better informed investment decision out of it. Until next week, it's John, David and Jazz. We'll see you again in another episode of Spark Your Fire. Take care. Bye.